Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. Governor J.B. Pritzker of Illinois recently signed into law a new measure which eliminates medical co-payments for skin cancer screening. With over 3 million new cases of non-melanoma skin cancer in the United States every year, this sounds like a solid positive for patients in Illinois. Waiving co-payments, which is sure to be popular and encourage more people to use a service, was mandated by the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, for services with high evidence of efficacy. Interestingly, skin cancer screening doesn't hold up to that scrutiny. For example, the United States Preventive Services Task Force, an independent volunteer panel of national experts in disease prevention, considers routine skin cancer screening an I recommendation. That is, there's insufficient evidence to recommend for or against the practice. My guest today is a dermatologist who's written a recent opinion piece in the journal JAMA Dermatology arguing against passage of this Illinois law. Dr. Ade Adamson is a board-certified dermatologist and assistant professor in the Department of Internal Medicine at Dell Medical School in Austin, Texas. While Dr. Adamson is certainly interested in the most effective prevention and treatment for skin diseases, including cancer, he makes the argument that widely recommended screening is counterproductive from a societal standpoint because we don't have enough dermatologists to handle the load, and the fact that mass screening will lead to so many false positives as to negate the benefit of screening in the first place, a phenomenon known as overdiagnosis. Dr. Adamson is one of very few African-American dermatologists in the United States, to the extent that some of his residency classmates referred to him as a unicorn. He's become a strong advocate for diversity in medicine as well as in his field of dermatology, and as a relatively new faculty member at a brand new medical school in Austin, he has a perch from which to practice dermatology, population health, and to analyze health policy as he's trained to do because he holds a master's in public policy from Harvard among his many degrees. Dr. Ade Adamson, dermatologist and assistant professor of medicine at Dell Medical School in Austin, is my guest today on Studio Tulsa Medical Monday. Dr. Ade Adamson, welcome to Medical Monday. Let's start by having you talk about the Viewpoint article you wrote for JAMA Dermatology in the... It looks like it came out online, at least in the August issue. It's called Eliminating Copayments for Skin Cancer Screening, a Public Health Policy with Insufficient Evidence. So what was the Illinois General Assembly, that's their legislature, thinking here? It seems like they passed this pretty overwhelmingly. What was the rationale?
So I think the genesis of the bill came about from one of the state representatives had a history of skin cancer. And they felt as though it was important for other folks to get their skin regularly examined. And I guess part of the issue is that in order for you to get your skin examined, you have to pay a copay. It's not listed as something recommended by the United States Preventative Services Task Force, right? So Obamacare passed in 2014 a bill with a provision that essentially anything that had a USPSTF grade of A or B to be free from copays, like colonoscopies and mammographies. And so the idea of this bill was to kind of put skin cancer screening on that same level of being free from copays for folks that have private insurance in the state of Illinois.
And when you talk about the Preventive Services Task Force for our listeners, and a grade of A or B essentially means that the evidence in favor of the procedure or the test is so good and for survival or reduction in morbidity that it's something that we essentially should do. But that is not the case for skin cancer screening, oddly enough. In other words, the evidence doesn't exist for all of us to have skin checks every year on an annual basis. So did I say that properly?
Correct. You did. But it did... It does not have a grade that is associated with you not recommending it. The grade it received was a grade of I, which means that there's insufficient evidence in order to inform the balance of the positives and the harms. And so that doesn't mean that skin cancer screening doesn't work, per se, or doesn't save lives, per se. But there has yet to be compelling evidence to show that that's the case for melanoma specifically, and there has yet to be a randomized controlled trial of folks at average risk trying to figure out whether there is a mortality benefit of skin cancer screening.
Yes, so here you are, you're a dermatologist, And this one state, Illinois, is saying, hey, let's pass skin checks for everybody, or at least a skin check for everybody without a copay. And yet you're advocating that this doesn't have sufficient evidence and that this shouldn't necessarily be passed. On what basis? You're doing it on more of a public health viewpoint that says, hey, let's, you know, we spend so much money on healthcare. Let's be very selective about the things that we advocate for everybody to do. Is that, do I have the argument, essentially?
Yeah, that's a part of the argument. You know, as clinicians, we should be as evidence-based as possible. And I would say that for screening, even though as a dermatologist, I'd love to see, you know, patients and make sure that they don't have any signs or symptoms of melanoma, you need to think about this problem in a larger public health context. There's a few things that I would say in that realm. The first is that in order for a screening program to work, more than just dermatologists are going to have to actually be involved in that process. There are not enough dermatologists to screen all adults, you know, above, you know, 35 to whenever every single year for skin cancer. There just aren't. So you're going to have primary care physicians, at the very least, involved in that process. And primary care physicians have a lot on their plate. And we want to make sure that what they're doing is as evidence-based as possible. So if we're recommending a public health intervention that ultimately will have to also involve primary care physicians, we should make sure that we get it right. Even though as a dermatologist, you know, you may think that I would have a self-interest in making sure that people got screened for melanoma.
Yeah, hear, hear. It's like a refreshing to hear a physician advocating for what's best on a resource basis, not necessarily in his or her, you know, own self-interest. I noticed, too, there is another of the Journal of the American Medical Association, and they have a number of publications, the AMA, the American Medical Association. One that you wrote the viewpoint in is the JAMA Dermatology, which, you know, is definitely a trade magazine that, you know, is really going to be limited mostly to dermatologists. There's one that's probably more widely read in my field, JAMA Internal Medicine, and they do an annual review. For one thing, they have a repeated or a regular column that's called Less is More. And this is something we've come back to on the program a few times, the idea, perhaps counterintuitively, that less in healthcare is sometimes more, because when we do more, we sometimes wind up chasing our tails, spending lots of money, creating lots of anxiety, and causing undue harm. In this year's version of the 2019 update on medical overuse, they actually name-checked a group of you and your co-authors, for this unpublished, as yet unpublished, dermatology overuse. And I was wondering if you'd be kind enough to share with us some scoops on perhaps what other things in dermatology aren't evidence-based or maybe overused, in fact.
Yeah, so I need to give credit to Raj Mastagini and John Barbieri and the students that also were involved in putting this together. And essentially, we go through a couple of years of data and look at some of the top papers that address the issue of overuse in derm. And it is something of a passion of mine, trying to figure out areas of overuse in derm and where we can rein in some costs. And myself and Arash Mastagini and some others in the field of dermatology have given regular lectures at our American Academy of Dermatology on various issues. One is lab overtesting for patients on isotretinoin, the trade name being Accutane, that's used for patients that have severe or moderate to severe acne. And there was this culture where providers would check labs monthly on patients. But recently, a lot of studies have come out to show that, you know, doing a monthly check of the CBCs or AST-ALT, even triglycerides, like every month for, you know, 6 to 8 months, really provides no outcome benefit. Another study that came out recently, and, you know, this is a shameless plug for myself, it was a systematic review looking at the likelihood of dysplastic nevi developing into melanoma after, you know, being biopsied. So dysplastic nevi are lesions that under the microscope look a little funny and atypical, but they're not quite what we would call malignant or melanoma. And providers often go back after a biopsy if they receive a pathology report that says it's a dysplastic nevus of moderate or mild dysplasia and actually go back and remove more of the lesion in hopes that they were preventing some subsequent melanoma. And so I did a large systematic review that actually looked at how likely that was the case. And what I found is that there's really no difference whether you go back and take more or you just leave the lesion alone after biopsy. And that's another area of overutilization in dermatology that I think the culture is slowly changing, and that's being done less and less.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa. It's Medical Monday. I'm John Schumann. My guest today is Dr. Ade Adamson, who's an assistant professor of internal medicine and also in the Division of Dermatology at Dell Medical School in Austin, Texas. And he's the author of a recent Viewpoint article in JAMA Dermatology, one of the scientific journals in his field of dermatology. And we're talking about overuse, the idea that some doctors do some procedures too many times without a good evidence base. And one of the things you mentioned was Accutane, the brand name for a medication for severe acne. And I just wanted to clarify, essentially, it seems like many of us, I would put myself in this category, have been frightened to have patients on Accutane because it's thought to be teratogenic. That is, it can cause harm to a fetus. And so it also can cause, you know, liver function test abnormalities. And that's what you mentioned before, that there are people who are repeatedly doing these blood tests on patients every month, looking at AST or ALT, which are liver function tests. People on certain medications will be familiar with this if they have to get it, or if you have hepatitis C, which is common, you often will get your liver function tests monitored. And so what you're saying is the evidence doesn't show any benefit to this, that in fact, is it safe to say Accutane may be safer than we think?
By and large, Accutane or isotretinoin is a relatively safe medication. There are situations where, you know, people do have rises in their AST, ALTs, or triglycerides, but those are extremely, extremely rare. And I would hazard to say your risk of actually having a bad outcome from isotretinoin as it relates to liver function is probably not nearly as much as, say, Tylenol, right? The amount of folks that end up having liver abnormalities as it relates to Tylenol is probably much higher than isotretinoin. Yet, you know, Tylenol is an over-the-counter, you know, medication. In isotretinoin, you have to actually register for a program and check in monthly in order to use it. And yeah, much of that is because of the teratogenicity that you brought up. So women of a childbearing potential are required to undergo a monthly pregnancy test in order to minimize that risk. Although there's data out there to support that the program hasn't necessarily been great at preventing pregnancies from happening.
Huh. Well, yeah, it is interesting and does wind up being very cumbersome and somewhat, you know, feel somewhat restrictive, although it is definitely a major advance in the treatment of severe acne. Now, back to the other example you gave of dysplastic nevi. I think in lay terms, would we call these dark moles, but they're essentially benign, right? I mean, is that what lay people would call a dysplastic nevus?
They're funny-looking moles.
Funny-looking moles, okay.
Yeah.
So we're talking about,
You know, they might look a little irregular in color slightly. And actually, dysplastic nevi is a histologic term. So you can't look at something on someone's skin and say that's a dysplastic nevus. What it is called is a clinically atypical nevus, right? And then once you biopsy it, and the pathologist looks and sees at the architecture underneath, and if it's, you know, quote, funny enough, they'll put it in the dysplastic nevus category. And dermatopathologists often grade them as mild, moderate, and severe, mostly out of fear that perhaps maybe they're missing an early evolving melanoma, maybe they'll put it in the severe category, right? And then recommend excision.
And so your systematic review showed essentially that there's not a high likelihood of them progressing on to melanoma, or was it just that we wind up over re-excising them a great deal when we don't need to?
Yeah, so I think that we over-excise mild and moderately dysplastic nevi. And what I would say about severely dysplastic nevi is the reason why they get called that is because the pathologist is somewhat hedging that a lesion, they're not sure if its architecture is worth actually calling it or is to the point where they should actually call it a melanoma or a melanoma in situ. Now, the way that melanomas have been diagnosed has not changed in many years. It's based on you looking at the architecture of these melanocytes under a microscope. And actually, there's a lot of inter-rater unreliability between dermatopathologists. And there was a great study that came out in BMJ that showed that the reliability between the same dermatopathologists that received pathology slides from really thin and early melanomas or dysplastic nevi really was fairly low, in the range of like 40 to 60% or so. And even within the same pathologist, given the slides at time one versus, you know, time two, their ability to call it the exact same thing was not extremely high, like the Capo coefficient of, you know, agreement.
Well, that raises a lot of interesting points. For one thing, the lack of inter-rater reliability just shows technically, I suppose, how subjective field medicine is. And when you're looking at cells under a slide, how two pathologists can reasonably disagree on something. And so this comes up because there's lots of push in the economy, if you will, for artificial intelligence to take over a lot of the work of a pathologist in terms of reading pathology slides or even radiology, looking at studies, you know, like x-rays or CAT scans or MRIs. And so you can see if two humans or a multitude of humans can't reliably agree on what something is, it's, you know, we tend to think of medicine, I think, in this sort of binary yes, no. I mean, is it cancer or not? Is it dysplastic or not? And it's, so you can see there's it's as much an art as a science in many cases. And that's kind of an interesting thing. And so it's probably understandable in many cases that people will go back and have a dysplastic nevus excised, even if it's mild or moderate, because ultimately we're all afraid of the melanoma. I think that's probably speaks to the good of dermatology, you know, educating the public on, you know, hyperpigmented lesions, these dark spots that are irregular that might in fact be melanoma, which, you know, if not caught and if spreads, is really the, you know, the one or two kinds of very dangerous skin cancer.
Yeah, and it also goes back to our previous discussion about screening. The more people that you put through screening, the more of these borderline spots you'll pick up that have of unknown biological significance, and your incidence of melanoma will go up. You know, there was a beautiful study by Gil Welsh and all that basically showed your likelihood of picking up melanoma increased with the rate of biopsies that you do.
Yeah. I want to shift gears a little bit and ask you about your role as a dermatologist. There was another recent, a little bit of a, I call it a mini profile of you in a resource called Medscape, which is an online magazine aimed at medical professionals, but it's certainly free and online and available to the lay public. And it identifies you, it says in here that your colleagues, your residents call you a unicorn. Can you explain what they mean by that?
It wasn't my residence that I have now. This is when I was in residency. My co-residents call me that because it was so rare to see a black dermatologist, particularly a black male dermatologist. There are very few of us in the United States for a number of varying reasons. And so that was just something that, a moniker that they used. And, you know, I have mixed feelings about it. You know, one, yeah, it's great to be unique, but I also don't want to be unique. It comes with a lot of pressure. And I would like to see the field of dermatology, which is one of the least diverse fields in terms of race and ethnicity, in terms of underrepresented minorities. I'd like to see it reflect more of the rich diversity that we see in the United States.
Yeah, well, I certainly would too. You know, it says in this article that 13% of Americans are black, but only 3% of dermatologists are black. And 16% of the general population is Latinx, but only 4% of dermatologists are Latinx. So there's definitely a disparity in terms of people of color or minorities entering into the field. What is it for our listeners that, you know, makes it so uneven in the field of dermatology?
I think part of it's interest. There's also exposure. If there are not a lot of folks that look like you in the field and you go through your rotation, you might not think it's something that's accessible for you. You know, a lot of people like to, when selecting a specialty, like to think about finding their tribe. And I think that if you have a tribe that's less, you know, diverse, it might keep some folks that might be super talented and great in contributing to the field from going into it.
Yeah, interesting. Well, so, well, let me re-identify you here. You're listening to Studio Tulsa. It's Medical Monday. I'm John Schumann. My guest today is Dr. Ade Adamson. He's an assistant professor of internal medicine and also in the Division of Dermatology at Dell Medical School in Austin, Texas. And Ade, you are also the web editor for JAMA Dermatology, this journal that we mentioned. And so tell us what your responsibility there is as web editor.
So as web editor, one of my responsibilities is picking the article of the week, the feature at JAMA Derm. But probably the most fun that I have is my role as the host of the JAMA Dermatology podcast, where I talk about one of the feature articles every month, and it's a great chance to dive in deep with some of the authors of these really interesting studies, and not only learn more about why they decided to choose to study whatever subject is of the day, but also what kind of clinical or research practice the different authors have. And we even get the chance to bring on trainees to discuss as well. So it's a really deeply rewarding opportunity that I get with JAMA Derm.
Well, that's great. I also want to know a little bit about the Dell Medical School. And I was wondering if you could share with our listeners some of the innovations. Now, the Dell Medical School is there in Austin, Texas, where you are a faculty member. It's a very new medical school, and it has some really interesting aspects about it. I guess maybe just tell us what attracted you to Dell Medical School.
What attracted me to Dell Med is that it was new. It was built from the ground up. We haven't even graduated a class of medical students yet, so we don't even have an alumni association yet. Our first graduating class will be in 2020. It is very rare that you get the opportunity to pursue a career at a medical school that is brand new. And for me, the idea of reimagining how healthcare is delivered and really being aware of population health as integral to growing young physicians, I wanted to be part of that mission. And, you know, so far I've been here a year and it's been terrific. And there's always something new and innovative happening on campus.
So is it the way that Dell organizes its departments where there aren't the classical silos that you see at most medical schools of clinical departments? It's more integrated, or is it just that population health is more of a key feature of all the departments than it is just sort of an add-on later?
I would say that it's both. So they have, you know, different the divisions of departments like, you know, women's health and dermatology is within internal medicine, as are other specialties as well. We're rolling out clinics that are focused around clinical issues. I'm starting a pigmented lesion clinic to integrate care for patients with melanoma. You know, and so we'll have surgical oncologists as well as a medical oncologist and, you know, and obviously me, a dermatologist. They have a whole women's health core. They have a whole musculoskeletal core where they involve rheumatologists and orthopedic surgeons and others. So it's really about integrating medicine top to bottom, like throughout the campus.
Yeah, I would say that in the reading that I've done, when you have integrated clinical care, for example, you pointed out pigmented lesions where you bring together not only dermatology but medical oncology and pathology in the same room, you get much better consensus on plans of action. And this is like what we call the tumor board model at other medical centers often that have National Cancer Institute designated centers where they bring together the surgeons, the medical oncologists, the radiologists, the radiation oncologists, the pathologists, and everyone even the social services in order to try to provide the optimal outcome and way forward for patients. Ade, I want to ask you, take you back a little bit to some of the advocacy work that you do. Originally, you gained a little bit of notoriety on Twitter. You interviewed an author. There was an article in JAMA Dermatology where Black patients were assessing their perceptions of their dermatology care was assessed. And one of the things that came out was that, I guess, some of the sunscreen manufacturers that are marketing to people of color are making some claims that I think you find spurious, shall we say. Tell us a little bit about what was happening there.
Yeah, so you bring up two separate points. So the first is there was a podcast in which I discussed with author Dr. Simone Patterson about the kind of care that black patients felt that they were getting in what are called skin of color clinics with expertise in certain skin and hair disorders in these clinics versus the care that they would get outside of those. Same with dermatologists that either aren't trained with that focus in mind or are less experienced, you know, with folks with skin of color. And so what they found is that patients basically felt like their care was much better in these clinics than outside of them. But I'm not suggesting that, you know, black patients should just see black physicians or white patients should just see white physicians. But I think it was important in showing that black patients are very sensitive about the experience of their interactions with dermatologists that don't necessarily feel comfortable with skin of color. So that was one answer to your question. And the other is one of my favorites. Does sunscreen reduce the risk of melanoma in darker skin types? And I've been on multiple rants on Twitter. I wrote an op-ed piece in the Washington Post about it. I was interviewed in the New York Times about it. Even Al Roker was on the Today Show talking about the piece. And, you know, it's still kind of a frustrating, you know, topic because I still see, you know, folks harboring this misconception. And I'm hoping to publish some work in this space to show that our understanding of UV exposure in darker skin types leaves a lot to be desired. And at this point, I shouldn't be recommending public health intervention, or at least we should be careful about recommending certain public health interventions that lack an evidence base.
Well, thank you for the tip-off. We'll have to link to that on our website. It's really been interesting talking to you. You have such a great perspective on both dermatology but also public health and screening and your role there at the Dell Medical School. I have one last question. So you are also, in addition to being an MD, a physician, you also have a master's in public policy. How does that play a role in your work or your advocacy?
So the most immediate is probably what we started this conversation with. You know, we were writing a viewpoint in JAMA Dermatology about the bill in Illinois for skin cancer screening. But it has also allowed me to really think about the intersection of, you know, public health, you know, economics, you know, cost, outcomes. And, you know, I'm just trying to use the quantitative aspects of the degree to inform what I, you know, think the future of dermatology should be and look like. And hopefully I can make some inroads in that arena.
Well, you have been very successful so far in your early career, and I wish you nothing but the best. My guest today was Dr. Adde Adamson, who's an assistant professor of internal medicine, also in the Division of Dermatology at Dell Medical School in Austin, Texas. Adde Adamson, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Well, that's our show for this Medical Monday. Studio Tulsa is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of KWGS or the University of Tulsa. For Studio Tulsa, I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. Thanks for listening.